However, I just want to let you know that when we are working on H.R. 33 and House Bill 2057, we are going to take some limited some invited testimony on those two because we have amendments that basically replace the bill. But the first thing I'm going to do is open a work session on H.R. 6. Matt, would you just give us a little bit of a reminder about what H.R. 6 does?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, H.R. 6 was heard last Thursday. It directs the Speaker of the House of Representatives to direct an interim committee to study issues concerning the security of state offices and to recommend changes in law to the 72nd Legislative Assembly.
Okay. Representative Hill.
Move H.R. 6 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Hill moves H.R. 6 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. H.R. 6, having received the constitutional majority, has declared passed. And let's see, who would like to carry that on the floor? Would Representative Smith, would you like to carry that on the floor? Okay, Representative Smith will be the carrier. And with that, then, we will close a work session on H.R. 6. I'm going to open a work session on H.J.R. 33. And I'm going to, we've got State Treasurer Randall Edwards here. And so, Treasurer Edwards, if you would go ahead and come on up. And if you would like to make comments on both H.J.R. 33 and, because I don't think I can work open both work sessions at the same time, but if you'd like to make comments on both bills, that would be fine. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Randall Edwards, State Treasurer of Oregon, and I appreciate the opportunity to be back before you to talk to you about two bills which would, in my mind, help the state long-term with its finances. And that is to create a stabilization fund. And I want to credit the chair for continuing to pursue this issue because this has been a longstanding need in Oregon and one in which the state treasurer's office has been involved in and has advocated for, and it's certainly something personally that I'd like to see the state move forward on. One of the things that you will hear time and time again is the importance of creating this from the standpoint of making sure that we have a way when the state's economy slows, and it depends on the depth of that slowness, a way in which it can continue to meet its obligations to the people of Oregon. What this stabilization fund would help buffer the effects of an economic slowdown. And it also could help, from my perspective, give the state an opportunity to continue to argue for a better credit rating from Wall Street. The state's bond rating is good today. However, I think one of the challenges as we go forward is to make sure that we continue that and have an opportunity to ask for a higher bond rating, which, to remind the members, is basically the interest that we will be charged when we ask to borrow money in the marketplace. It saves millions of dollars to having a good, strong credit. And it's an obvious statement, too, that Oregon's income tax revenue stream is particularly sensitive to changes in the marketplace. I think the big change for us in the state further is that we now have a new dependency on making sure we're obligated to meet our needs for our schools, our K-12 schools, which is really a dramatic change from the 90s, and quite frankly, we've never experienced a strong enough slowdown to see how we will continue to meet those obligations as well. And as a result of Measure 5, the state's budget requires now that we fund largely the K-12 system. So the timing of putting this together couldn't be any more pertinent. I wanted to just cover, I handed out a couple of things, a handout to you regarding the states, when you look at how states have looked at these rainy day funds and they can, or stabilization funds, and how they do help ensure a state's good credit rating. And if you look at that piece, it talks about when many states started to act on this, and that is in the early 90s when there was a slowdown. Many states saw a need at that time to begin to move forward. I would submit to you that we're in a similar stage entering in this decade, currently with a slowing of the economy, that it is, again, time for the state to stand up and put this in place and work towards filling this stabilization fund. We recently, as state treasurer, I chair a group called the State Debt Policy Advisory Commission, and we had some invited testimony since the last time I was here about why it's important for the state to have the stabilization fund. And a person named George Lung from Solomon Smith Barney presented to us his view of some of the factors that should drive the need for Oregon to put this together. In fact, Mr. Lung used to work for one of the bond rating firms, so he has a dual hat and understands Oregon's finances extremely well, and raised basically three points about why Oregon should be looking at this in light of its credit rating. One, in his view, Oregon's liberal initiative process, the use of it. Two, the Oregon's lack of some other tax, in his mind, a sales tax when you look across the country, and a relatively higher dependency on lottery receipts. And the third factor being Oregon's greater dependence on an income tax, piggybacking back on federal tax policy. So again, creating a budget stabilization fund as outlined in these bills really will provide some long-term stability to Oregon. One of the things I was going through before coming into this meeting was looking at what were some of the best practices to improve a state's credit. And the number one practice was to establish and enhance a rainy day or stabilization reserve. And the factors that they talk about that you should consider, and quite frankly, the bills before you do address all of them, are embedded in helping ensure that we have a good fund. One is to look at the government's cash flow and operation requirements. Two, the historic volatility of revenues and expenditures through economic cycles. Three, will the fund be a legal requirement or an informal policy? And, of course, you've addressed that by formalizing this in the Constitution. Four, under what circumstances can reserve be withdrawn? And you've outlined that, I think, very prudently. And the last point is, will there be a mechanism to rebuild the reserves once they've been utilized? And perhaps that's an area that needs to be explored a little more with this legislation, because I didn't see that in there. But I do think that's a consideration as you go forward of how once, assuming you put the structure in place and start filling the pot, get to a point where we have to draw it down, how we refill that. And I think that's a consideration. As I spoke to you before, from my perspective and the financial community's perspective, whether you go to the Constitution or not, whether it's statutory or in the Constitution, that's really a policy choice. It doesn't seem to matter to the credit rating agencies where that's put in place. Many states are statutory, but I understand that perhaps the need for putting it in the Constitution. On the other hand, it isn't critical. So from my perspective, you got a very good bill here to start framework discussion of why we need a stabilization fund. Personally, I take this out to the people through the HJR. I promise you that I will be very involved in that campaign to try to make this a reality for the state, because it's important enough from my perspective and for the states that we do this. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Representative Hill and then Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Randall, there's only two ways in which to draw monies from this fund, and that is if appropriations will be at least 3% less than appropriations of the general fund of the current biennium.
Mm-hmm.
And would you interpret that to be in totality? Would that calculation be done? I'm trying to understand sort of how the mechanism would work, because if you're sitting in the legislative session and you're projecting what you think your budgets would be,
mm-hmm.
But you need the money, and so, I'm just trying to understand in terms of how you would interpret that, in terms of how the legislature would use it as a calculation to figure out that, yes, we're going to spend less money. So essentially, the governor, if wanted to manipulate it, could present a budget that was spending 3% less. Is that the mechanism? There'd be a finding that the legislature needs to adopt, or would that just sort of be a preamble in the bill?
Yeah.
You know, pursuant to blah blah blah, the legislature finds that if we don't spend this money, it'll be 3% less. Would you anticipate that could happen on a discrete budget, or would it have to be in totality to the budget, to the entire budget? Because I could see a case where you may not underfund one agency, but you may underfund another agency, and then would you anticipate that the legislature could then make a finding that it's going to be 3% less in that discrete budget, and then they could then draw monies from the fund from that for that discrete or budget?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill, that would be a really good question to ask perhaps the next speaker, Lynn Lundquist, who I think was involved in drafting this, but my read of this is you're talking about the totality, not just any specific budget in and of itself. So I would assume, my thought would be that the entire general fund and looking at that projected 3% down given the revenue stream, but he could answer that more specifically.
Okay. But wouldn't that be a huge swing? I'm trying to understand in terms of, that would be a huge swing from an economic standpoint before you could do that. I'm trying to put some measures in terms of how we would judge when this fund would kick in and when it wouldn't kick in terms of, because when you put language like this in the Constitution, you know, since it's not very specific, and there's it's going to be lawsuit city the first time somebody tries to use this. And then the other option is been a decline of two or more consecutive quarters. And so, are we in that case now? Have we had two quarters of decline in payroll?
I don't know the answer to that, Mr. Chair. That's a good question.
Because because in that case you could have two quarters, and your projection could still be up, but then you would fit the test that you could then draw.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill, I'd be happy to find out if we meet that second criteria. I can't say for sure that we have. Certainly, we've had a slowdown in our economy, and whether it met that specific criteria, I'm not sure.
Thank you.
Representative Burke?
I was really going to follow up on Representative Hill's 3%, but I'll hold that back.
Thanks.
For our next speaker. But this is a philosophical question. Normally, and I certainly love the idea of a rainy day fund, but if I personally were going to have a rainy day fund, I probably would wait to the point where I have more money than I expected and put that aside rather than not pay some bills that I need to pay and take money to put in a rainy day fund. What is your philosophical idea with declining revenues of establishing this fund at this time?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's interesting because if you look at what I was just pointing out to, most states didn't begin to address this issue until they got into a need, and that is when the economy slowed in the early 90s. I guess that's a question of when do people act? Is it when it rains, when they need it the most and they don't have it, or I would agree philosophically, we should have had this in place some time ago, and we should have been salting money away in it for some time. We haven't, so you know, it's like many things. When do you start? I think it may be that it's clear today where we might need it now, and then particularly in light of the K-12 funding, in my mind, which is really now a large part of our obligation to citizens of Oregon, which was not around in the early 90s. So I think when you look across the country, it did take that time in which there was a slowdown before the policymakers yourself decided that it was time to move forward. I think what this is doing is just, again, setting up the framework so as you go forward into the next biennium to begin to have the policy in which we will have a stabilization fund, which, again, from my perspective, is long-term financially very prudent to have.
Any other questions?
Sure, yeah.
Representative Hill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. the only two tests to draw money out of these are the ones that we previously did. What if there was some catastrophic event? There doesn't seem to be the ultimate emergency clause. So in terms of, say, mm-hmm. we have another
earthquake
or something, that you would not be able to tap these dollars based upon a catastrophic event in terms of it could require money, but you're not in an economic situation in terms of, and so the only way then the legislature would have to get out of the mess would be raise taxes. Even though you have something there that is, you know, if this is only for economic conditions and rather than catastrophic
right.
issues that occur, that would be another level of concern.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill, that's a good point. I mean, one hopes that wouldn't occur, but you might need that ultimate kick out, and which would be...
Even if it's a higher level test than 3/5,
right.
sort of 2/3 or something, you can declare an actual emergency and be able to access the dollars.
It's a point well taken, particularly since we've recently had some earthquake activity. You know, it's one of those where I haven't really looked at what other states do about that, but my assumption is that it's something that should be ultimately part of this discussion. One other point is the 9%. That's a pretty high figure. When you look across the country, most of them are around 5%. So as far as the size of the fund, I mean, it's going to be carrying a pretty large chunk of change if you get to the 9%.
Because that would be $1 billion.
Roughly.
Are we at 12
yeah.
billion right now?
Yeah.
A general fund? Is that about the right figure?
Yeah.
So it's, and then just ever increasing ever after that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lynn Lundquist. Mr. Lundquist is coming up, let me just clarify something, committee, that I didn't clarify earlier. On HJR 33, we are talking primarily about, we're talking about the Dash 4 amendments. On House Bill 2057, we are talking about the Dash 2 amendments, so I just want to make sure that everybody understands which set of amendments we're talking about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Lynn Lundquist. I'm the president of the Oregon Business Association. Welcome the opportunity to present this concept to you this morning. I have not had the opportunity, I think, to come before this particular committee in this session. I'll just say just a few words about the Oregon Business Association because I think it's relevant to the concept we have before us today. It is a bipartisan group of businesses throughout the state, from very large to some very small businesses, and this is our top priority for this session. We have been looking at this particular idea for a long time because most of the people in the association, I want to represent, suggest one name particularly, Ron Tempe from Standard Insurance as a member. If you may remember, in the last election cycle, Mr. Tempe and Superintendent Bunn and the governor had a measure to put on the ballot in regard to this exact idea, the rainy day fund, the security fund. They dropped it because they thought of the competition of all the other measures that was there. And afterwards, they were sorry actually that they didn't put it onto the initiative process itself. The foundation of our association is simply that we're interested not only in the hardcore business issues of taxes, workers' comp, those kind of things, but we are primarily focused on education, environment, and transportation because we think those are the real business issues. If you really want to get down to the facts that really affect the economic climate of this state. And so with that little bit of introduction about OBA, I'd like to talk some of the history I've had as well from the standpoint of being in the legislative process. I guess one of the points that people say to me when I was out on the campaign trail, regardless of whatever office it might be, they always say, Lynn, why don't you run the state government as a business? And that's a very irritating subject to me because when you do that, when they make that comment and then you try to establish a reserve, which if there's anything that's fiscally conservative and a sound business principle to have some reserve for bad times, and you try to make that happen, as we have tried over a period of years and been unsuccessful, it's a little bit I guess, irritating to a person. Simply what that says is I think the time is right. I know some questions with the last speaker in regard to when you do this, you know, the economic downturn, the time to do it. The answer to that is absolutely no. But the answer is also, that's the only time you probably create the emphasis, create the support to make that happen, because it's like anything else, you know, when it's raining and the roof is leaking, that's when you think about fixing the roof, to be a little facetious about it. And that's exactly what we're doing here. Oregon has, I think, it continues to be recognized as one of the leaders of this United States. Now, we're proud so many times of the things that we've accomplished, somewhat, you know, maybe on as a individual position, a little different than the rest of the pack, if you will, all the way from the beach bill to the bottle bill to our land use process. And I think those are things that Oregonians are proud of. I'm not sure that many of us would want to stand up and say, by gosh, you know, we're one of only five states that have reserve fund, that don't have reserve fund. We're really proud of that. And I don't think that's where Oregonians are. I think it's time that we drop out of being, guess, different in regard to reserve fund and join what I'd say the rest of the states in building one. As I think is very, very essential. The bill, there's been some discussion about the cap already. If you might recall, in other bills that have been put up, we've talked about an absolute cap. There was a $1 billion cap in another bill that was proposed. We chose not to go with that because we think it makes economic sense. I guess it's my economic training that comes to the forefront, that we allow this fund to grow as the need would grow. 20 years from now, $1 billion won't be the same as it is today. And so that's why we think it needs to go as a continuing growth mechanism. Also, you notice there's a floor in this bill that says that you cannot use any of this bill until there's $250 million in the fund. That's a new idea from the times that have been in past sessions. I think it's a good, valid point, simply that let's not use the fund if there's not enough in it to really make a difference. I don't know the magical figure, but the figure we've chosen is $250 million. Once that floor has been reached, you could go all the way down to zero. The 3% less in the current biennium, that is based on the total general fund appropriations that we're talking about in the aggregate, not for one individual particular budget. That is a fairly severe test. The other test of two consecutive quarters, remember that it says there, it's not talking about the unemployment rate going up, it's talking about total employment. And that's critical because that's a harder test to meet than just simply the unemployment rate going up for two consecutive quarters. That's significantly different. As you all know, the total employment goes up even when we have an unemployment rate going up, depending on how fast the two might move, and simply because we have more people involved in the process, more population all the time. So it's a little different test than maybe what first meets the eye. With that, Mr. Chairman, trying to keep this brief, I certainly welcome any questions, and again, thank you for taking having the foresight and the willingness to, what I say, bring on a very important issue for the state.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lynn, what was the rationale for the 9%? Was that based on some research, or, I mean, why did you pick 9% in there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hill, we looked at the other states throughout the nation. Actually, they're all the way from about 3% to 10%. The concept there was let's keep the fund high enough so that if we do have a serious downturn, that there's enough there to really make a difference. And that's the 9% is not scientific. It's a matter of one that we thought was doable. And we looked at the present budget, $1 billion approximately, as you mentioned earlier. That's about where that is.
Follow up, Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What can you describe in terms of what your opinion is on how the monies would kick in terms of, you know, if the legislature wants to go tap these dollars? We've got two tests. We've got a 3% less than appropriation from the general fund from the current biennium. And I'm trying to understand how the legislature would interpret that. Since it's the Legislative Assembly making that determination, is that at their sole discretion to make that determination? Is there any you know, it's only addressing the Legislative Assembly, and so they can come up with any test they want, or do you have some concept in terms of how else we might apply this language that says, if it's 3% less, is that a discrete budget? Is it total budgets? Is it...
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hill, I worked with Joan Robinson in Legislative Council to try to determine the best language for that. Yes, it's in the aggregate. It's simply, we had to tie it to some base. So we go to the last biennium to start. That's your base. Okay, that's a total appropriation to the general fund. This likewise in the present biennium would be for the total appropriations, not for any specific, you know, agency or anything like that. So it's looked at how many resources are available, the total volume of the resources available, let's say in the 2001-03 budget, compared to what we appropriated in the 01 in the 99-01 budget. So it'd be the difference between those. If the new resources available were 3% less than what we appropriated in the last biennium, then you would be able to kick it in, or the other one, as you indicated.
Well, if I might, Mr.
Follow up, Representative.
So in that scenario, if revenue collection is flat, you get no more than you had the last biennium. So you have caseloads increasing. Okay, so in other words, you have more demand for services. So you would not be able to tap this fund to address those issues, because the dollars that you have available to appropriate would not be there. So in terms of, so you would then end up having to make programmatic cuts as a result.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hill, you're absolutely right. This is not seen as a mechanism whereby you can continue exactly the same level of services. This is designed for exactly what it says. It's when we have a serious economic downturn that we don't have to raise taxes, really. That's one of the big issues, in my opinion. From an economist, it's very, very pertinent. If there's anything that was wrong in the 82 scenario that we had, was the fact we went and raised taxes during a time when you're in an economy downturn. And that makes absolutely no sense. So it's not thought of as, you know, things can just go on like we want them to, caseloads can continue. And it simply means everyone's going to have to tighten the belt. But we don't have, we're trying to preserve or prevent a catastrophe.
Follow up, Representative Hill?
Okay, and that brings me into the second ability to use the dollars. Two quarters of consecutively declining adjusted payroll, non-farm payroll employment. Okay. That seems to me not to be the same level as a 3%. So in terms of, so you've got a real harsh test in terms of, I mean, that would be catastrophic from a collection standpoint, and then you can have two quarters where payroll employment declines. And so, I mean, you know, we're up here like this, and now we see companies, you know, laying people off, and so you can ultimately have less employment in two quarters, and there's no measure on that in terms of, and so, and then you could tap the dollars. So, but you would not necessarily be in a economic downturn.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hill, according to Paul Warner in Legislative Revenue, when we try to define, he's the one who brought this language forward, that is considered an economic decline. It is not easily met, because it's not, as I stated earlier, it's not unemployment rates going up. That's not what we're talking about. Now, unemployment rates would be going up, but you could have unemployment increasing at the same time because of the increase in the population base, that you still wouldn't have total non-farm employment going down. And that's the language that the Legislative Revenue came forth with. A bill earlier that we looked at talked about a decline in economic activity. a certain percentage, and how do you define that? And so I went to Paul Warner and said, how do you define that? And that's the language he brought forward.
So that is a recession. Is that a definition of a recession? I mean, I'm trying to understand in terms of how we tap these dollars, because I'm trying to understand, you know, what comes in a political dynamic. Because if you're sitting here and you've got $1 billion sitting out in the fund, and suddenly you're presented with, you know, a budget situation where you don't meet the 3% less appropriations, but you have 1, 2, 3 agencies taking massive cuts in terms of, you know, and cuts at a programmatic level, and you can't touch the money. And then your only option then is to raise taxes when you've got $1 billion sitting out in a fund. That doesn't make much sense. But then this whole issue that if you have a catastrophic event, there is no mechanism to tap the dollars in a catastrophic event. You would have to wait for the catastrophic event to fully emerge over, you know, 6 months, or the next biennium, unless you could come in and tap the dollars if you had to go do it. That's why I'm just sort of, there doesn't seem to be any real answers here in terms of how to when you have other issues that occur that are not economic but yet devastating that could then drive you into a different and a worse situation.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hill, I think you have brought up two questions, I understand, in that. One of them is in regard to the two successive quarters. Let me talk about that a minute first. As you indicated earlier, you could have a flat economy, you know, and you still wouldn't have necessarily an unemployment turned down. So it's according to what I've been told and in my background, is that it's fairly significant when you have two successive quarters that happens in. Now, that might be a little, and I could build cases where that would be easier to meet than the 3% decline. But again, this is not thought of as is not designed to be easy to get into. It's only when you really have, you know, when the chips are down. In your second question regarding catastrophic conditions, and we've talked about that. And one of the difficulties with that is that from the general public standpoint, and then you open this up to, okay, there's whose mind is it catastrophic? And can we get into the fund easier than we should? That's part of it's a political as much as anything. And you must also remember, let's say in 97 we had an earthquake. Well, the economy was not going downhill. Now, I'm not just saying that it's anyone here wants to raise taxes, but at least it's better to do that when the economy is, you know, not in the tube, as the saying goes. So in other words, that may not be the best option in your mind, but it's much better to do it then than it is to do it when you're in recession. Now, I understand you could have, I suppose, both. You could have a catastrophic event during a recession, but you'd probably be into the fund anyway if that was there. Is it a perfect, design here from the standpoint of being able to meet all these conditions? No. But I can tell you the general public out there is not, in my opinion, is not supportive of any kind of a fund unless there are fairly tight guidelines around it, and that's what we talk about putting it in the Constitution, because, and I've been in the same position you have, they don't trust the legislature. I wish it wasn't that way. If I had my own personal, I'm talking just personally, I'd like to just let the legislature decide when to do it. But that, ladies and gentlemen, is not a viable political position.
Follow-up, Representative Hill?
Well, I would disagree with you. I think in terms of the people do trust the legislature. I think in terms of the legislature and the legislative process does generate good work product. And I think in terms of, I'm getting more and more concerned here that we're going to lock dollars away in a scenario. I mean, I'm just curious in terms of in our past economic downturns, if you go back to 82, would it have kicked in 82? Were the conditions such that we would have tapped the dollars then? I'm also interested in trying to understand in terms of how other states in this model use these dollars in terms of, I would, you know, it becomes problematic to me if we're going to sit there and have, you know, a 9% is it overarching, so you got $1 billion that it would cap out of eventually, you know, and then the dollar, then the interest would start kicking out. And then as the general fund grows, you just have a fund growing. And if it's something that, you know, at some point, you know, the voters are going to go, you know, why do you have this money sitting over here? You know, if we've never can conceive of hitting that, you know, from our past, I'm trying to use the past as a measure as to what we might expect in the future. So,
Chairman Crummell and Representative Hill, it absolutely would have kicked in the 80s. Would have kicked twice in the 80s. So it would have been there if we would have had the fund available. And as you'll mostly remember, K-12 was not funded by 70% by the state at that time. And that's the only reason K-12 survived in the 80s was because we were funded by the property tax. So it absolutely would have kicked in that process. And I hope, I want to clarify the record, I'm not saying that the legislature doesn't do a good job. I think you all know my positions on that. But I'm just telling you from a very practical level that as I've talked to many, many people across the state, and they talk about building a fund without some sideboards on it other than just the legislature making all the decisions, it's not a politically acceptable map.
Follow-up, Representative.
Well, I mean, this is the legislature making the decisions. They're the only ones who have this test. And so the way this is drafted, what is Article 9? Is that the legislative branch? Matt, could you?
Where are you?
Because I'm looking at which article we're amending, because it could be a situation where it's going to be the legislature is the one who's going to set the test in terms of, you know, in a pure separation of powers. If this is only the purse, then the legislature is going to make the determination on what 3% means, and it won't, you know, the courts won't have a say, the executive won't have a say in this. We're going to be the sole legislative assembly making the determination.
Chairman, Mr. Chairman and Representative Hill, as I have been told about who decides that, it'd be, let's say, revenue and fiscal that would make the determination of what that is. You also notice in here that even if these tests were made economically, were met, that the legislature also has a 3/5, simply trying to say that, okay, we're going to create a fund, let's use it when we really need it. Let's not use it because of, as everyone says, it rains too much in Oregon.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hill, are you done? Representative Garrard is next.
Thank you. Lynn, I'm not quite sure that this bill will enhance the public's perception of the legislature's fiscal decisions. I think it leaves lots of room for manipulation on these funds somewhere down the line. But my primary question is going to the other end of Representative Hill, who is on the 3%. I want to make sure I understand. You could not access these funds until its total exceeded 9% of the general fund. Is that correct?
Chairman Beck and Representative Carr, no, that's not correct. Is that the funds can be tapped as soon as you reach over $250 million. It says specifically in there that once that floor has been reached, then you can go ahead and tap the funds. But the idea is simply that, you know, if you had $50 million in there, you probably shouldn't tap them because it's not going to make enough difference. Let's get enough in the fund. And the 250 is not scientific. Again, it's one that we thought that was reasonable in the process.
Mr. Chair, I'm referring to in the dash 4 on line 15, under section 15, it says I hope I've got an updated version, if the Economic Security Fund has a balance at the beginning of a biennium that exceeds 9% of the general fund appropriations for the proper biennium. In other words, that's the trigger that allows you to access these funds. That if you have less than 9% in there, you cannot access those funds.
Mr. Chair, I think in terms of Lynn is referring to the statutory version of it where it has the $250 million trigger in there, the constitutional has the 9% level. So there is not $250 million trigger in the constitutional.
That's right.
So if we pass the constitutional, it would be 9%, and we would not be able to, the statutory would be unconstitutional then.
Correct.
No.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair and Representative Girard, what it says there is that the interest earned, what we're trying to get at there, you're on line 6, line 16, that the interest earnings shall be transferred to the general fund after it hits the 9%. The interest earnings stay in the fund until it hits the 9% level. After the 9% level, then the interest earnings go into the general fund so that you don't have a fund just funding itself. That was a concept there. And I don't know if we don't have something written appropriately, but that's what it says to me under that one there. The interest earnings in the fund will go into the general fund from the security fund.
Follow up?
Go ahead.
I'm not quite sure that, I don't know, I agree with that idea that you're going to take all the interest and any other monies put in over 9% and automatically put them in the general fund. Am I hearing you?
Once the fund reaches its limit of 9% cap.
Okay, that is the limit. You can't have any more money in it but that.
That's correct.
And then the money goes to the general fund.
That's correct.
The interest.
There wouldn't be any other money appropriated because you wouldn't appropriate money into it because the fund's already full. Once the fund is full, then the interest would go into the general fund. The concept there again being that we think that that will go into the general fund for those purposes. If you don't have the need.
But the 9% constantly rises, basically.
Right. Representative Garrard, as I understand it, as the general fund increases, the fund will increase as well, as long as it does not exceed 9%. If at any time it exceeds the 9%, then the interest, it won't exceed 9%, and the interest off the fund, as long as it's at 9%, will go into the general fund. Is that correct, Lynn?
Or decreases.
Say that again.
If your general fund were decreasing,
that'll be the day.
That'll be the day, everyone.
Yeah, right.
But no, it's conceivable.
Well, if they keep cutting off water, that can happen.
Yeah. Well, that's just kind of counter.
Yeah. Okay. No, I'm all right with that.
Yeah.
Okay. Representative March.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lundquist, Mr. Lundquist, this is an excellent idea. It saved Multnomah County a lot of money by having a reserve fund. Their bond, they've gotten great savings in their bond capacity every time they've gone out for bonds. But it is kind of a new concept and maybe needs some fine tuning through a little evolution of time. How big of a problem do you think it would be with the bonding agencies, et cetera, if we did just the legislative version of it, put it in the statutes, so that as time went along, we could see what was working, what wasn't working, and then at a later date, maybe go for the constitutional.
Mr. Chair, President March, from a straight economic standpoint, from an analytical standpoint, from a practical standpoint, the idea of putting into only the statute is very meritorious. Is meritorious. The difficulty that we've seen is that to build adequate support for it, not only in the legislature, but by the people who in the end out there are the ones we have to answer to, is that what I've been told over and over again is that we need to have the sideboards in the Constitution so that the legislature will not utilize this fund for any whim that comes along. And I don't like that any more than any of you do, and I'm sure. But I'm just trying to be practical, politically practical about the process. And it's, I can't give you an answer, just, I guess, you know, precisely definitive because of that.
Thank you.
You're done? Representative Hill.
I guess, Lynn, I guess I firmly believe that the legislature acts in response to its constituency. And so it's not people sitting around here with, you know, a whims that we want to go off and go do. It's usually a constituency. And in order to get 31 votes, 16 votes, and a governor in the middle, that's a pretty high hurdle in and of itself. I don't mind raising the bar to the 3/5. I don't mind having a 2/3 bar. You know, because I think in terms of anybody who's tried to, on something that's controversial, trying to get 31, you know, that's hard enough. You know, it's not quite that easy. But I guess my concern here is we've got this test, and I guess I'm not feeling comfortable in terms of on what the non-farm payroll employment means. So in terms of maybe we can think about getting Paul Warner to come in and sort of explain what that means and how that relates to a 3% decline, so that we're talking apples and apples here. You know, but I mean, I think I'd be more comfortable with the statutory version of this going forward to see how it goes, because you know. We made political hay out of a statutory kicker for many a year before we've thrown it into the Constitution, you know. And I think even though, yeah, we can make choices, but I think in terms of we're responding to the needs of the people, and it's their dollars that will be sitting out there, and so it's kind of this notion of protect us from ourselves. But I don't necessarily think in terms of that's all necessarily bad, because we're still responding to the needs and the pressures coming to us. And if ultimately we make a choice that those dollars need to be expended for immediate concerns, I think that's an okay decision, because you are responding to the needs of the people of Oregon.
Mr. Chair, Reverend Hill, I guess my only response is, as I said earlier, I personally, that's fine. I would certainly we want to do what this committee wants to do so they feel comfortable in that regard. I'm just trying to present what I have felt has been where I've viewed the people, and you know, term limits, I don't think have said that the people have great, you know, we're going to let the legislature do what they want to, we're going to even kick them out, which I have a real big difficulty with. But so how you make all that mix politically happen, I don't know. I guess I'd just like to say this. I think this is too big of an issue to not be able to work through whatever details are necessary to make it become a reality. I'm very passionate about that. It's just absolutely nuts, in my opinion, that when you sit there as administrators of the state, unable to put aside some funds that you do in your own life, in your own family, your own business, you know, whatever you want to say. I just don't understand that we as are going to stand up and say we're proud, we're one of five states, my God, we don't have a rainy day fund. And that's, so let's work through the detail, whatever that has to be, but let's not lose sight of the goal that we have in mind here.
Other questions? I have a few.
Okay.
Lynn? So as I understand it, we could establish this fund with these parameters and not put it in the Constitution.
That's correct.
My understanding, we have a few measures here, but we could improve the statutory measure and not go to the voters.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay. And would Oregon Business Association, if the legislature approved that, would they support that?
Yes, they would.
Okay. Do you have a sense of what other states have done? Do other states have these stabilization funds embedded in their constitutions, or is it all over the map? Do we know that?
Mr. Chairman, it's all over the map. I wish I would have brought I have a summary of that I should have had, so I could have told you percentages where they are. But they are. They're all over the map.
But there are a healthy number of states that do have it in the Constitution, yes, not just one or two.
Both ways.
Okay.
I'm sorry I can't tell you the definitive answer. I can get that for the committee.
Mm-hmm. I think that would be helpful.
Okay.
Just for some perspective. I guess the other question is why not begin? I guess one of the concerns I have, I've seen the legislature for all the years I've been a staff member and member. We set up funds, we set up task forces, a pot of money to put some money in because it makes us feel good, and we never do it. And I guess I'd be a little nervous about setting up another fund to give the perception that we've done something when we really haven't until we bite the bullet and establish a funding mechanism, or not a funding mechanism, but start allocating funds. And there's been a lot of talk of where that money would come from, and maybe we ought to just bite the bullet and build the political support in the next few weeks here to identify various revenue streams rather than going after one fund. You know, I know there's talk of a little bit of the SAFE fund. Representative Witt has talked about the Common School Fund. There have been talks about lottery funds. Though some of those things would take a constitutional referral to start maybe a percentage of the interest from these large state funds. It wouldn't impact them significantly, but would start even something that minuscule would seem to me an approach we'd want to look at. Has the business association, would you be open, if we were to go to the Constitution, to open up some funding sources like the lottery, future lottery revenues? Would OBA support something like that or not?
Mr. Vice Chairman, yes. The short answer is yes. I appreciate that line of questioning because I absolutely believe it's not enough just to set the fund up. But I also, having been through the political process you have to take a bite of the apple at the time. We at least need to have a mechanism that's there to make it happen, a reality. Now, there will be other bills, at least one other bill, perhaps two, coming this session yet we're working on, lottery being one of them. But we chose not to put them in the original concept, so that we don't lose the concept over the fight of which way you're going to try to fill it. And again, I think that's a political reality that we need to look at. Let's have a good discussion about other. OBA, Oregon Business Association, will be there with both feet trying to make that become a reality.
You're having a very healthy discussion in your absence, Aaron.
Okay.
But it's your turn.
Okay, thank you. Are there Representative Phil?
Just a comment, Mr. Chair. I would feel comfortable in going with statutory today. I don't have a problem with that. But I think in terms of then working the constitutional thing, I think ultimately we can get something that I think I could support. But I think in terms of the constitutional amendment needs a little bit of work. But I would feel comfortable going with statutory today.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Are there any other questions for Mr. Lundquist?
Well, I guess I have another one following up on that, Mr. Chairman. And I haven't compared the constitutional statutory. Are there pieces in the constitutional measure that if we were to only go with a statutory measure, is that sufficient in its current form to accomplish what we need, or do we need to add some things from the constitutional measure to the statutory measure if that's the route we want to go?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beck, no, the statutory is actually the more complete. It has the total picture in it. The floor that one of you were talking about here, I forget, is in the statutory provision, and we chose to put that in the statutory only because over time, maybe that floor might want to change because it's an absolute amount. It's not a percentage amount. So, the answer is that the statutory is all-inclusive. So we don't have anything in the constitutional that would have to be taken out of that to put into the statutory.
Okay. Representative Tomei.
Thank you. Lynn, I just want to thank you for all the work that you've done in this. And even though it's rather short bill, it's obviously you and other people have put a great deal of time and effort into this, and I want to thank you all for doing that.
Thank you, Representative.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Lundquist. Lori Wimmer. And, committee, I want to remind you that we do have session starting at 10, and so we'll have to... we'll try to keep moving.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, Lori Wimmer Whalen with the Oregon Education Association. First of all, I'd like to join in the chorus of thanking all of those who have proposed stabilization funds this session and prior. And some of you may know there was even a work group during the 1998 interim that also reviewed this question under the leadership of Ron Timpey and with staffing by Richard Munn and came up with proposals of their own. OEA is supportive of the concept of stabilization funds or economic security funds, but we also have some questions and concerns with respect to a number of these bills, and this is no exception. We are in general supportive of the House bill before you today, and we'd like to see a couple minor tweaks to that, if you could indulge me for just a moment. First of all, we're mostly okay with the trigger mechanism found in the bill, but we would suggest one amendment. On page 3, line 2, where you'll see the word and at the end of that sentence, and we would propose the word or, so that relative to some of the questions you've heard today, the legislature could, in fact, by a 3/5 vote, choose to use the fund for some other kind of catastrophic emergency other than the economic downturn as described in the previous paragraph.
Excuse me, Lori, I want to just clarify. You're talking about the dash two amendments to the House bill?
Yes, I am. And it's on page 3, line 2, the last word after non-farm payroll employment, semicolon, it has the word and. I would propose that you change it to the word or so that the trigger could happen with some other kind of catastrophic requirement. And that would give a little bit more flexibility to future legislatures to consider cataclysmic weather events or what have you. Secondly, excuse me, I've got the the capitalization language on page 2 of the bill, lines 11 and 12, are described as flexible. We have a point to make about that, and several legislators on this panel have already made that same point. The use of current revenues in any legislative session, particularly in times when money is scarce, as it is right now, would be problematic for the Oregon Education Association because we believe that it would be a little like starving your children today to be able to afford Harvard tomorrow. If you don't have enough revenue to pay for current programs and yet you've got a line item coming out of the general fund or lottery dollars to fund up your rainy day fund, it is in competition with those core programs that we think ought to be a number one priority. And if there were a way to insert some sort of language that offers future legislatures direction on that point, we would be more comfortable with that. And finally, with respect to how it is capitalized, we believe that just like families and businesses, and indeed about 75% of the states that have surplus account, rainy day fund type accounts, when you have more money than you have budgeted for through good luck, that surplus ought to be where you put your rainy day fund. You ought to use those surplus dollars rather than existing revenue sources. I know that that's a hot potato in this building. The individual kicker, at least, is a sacred cow and probably can't, under current timing, be used as a capitalization source. But it is counterintuitive to take from the bone when you've got that money sitting there. And any citizen who understands the revenue picture and the tax system of Oregon understands it upon that education. And at least it would seem to me that if there are unanticipated ending balances, corporate kicker bunnies, and so forth that are a little bit less sacred territory, that those ought to be the pots of first resort to this legislative body to use to capitalize those accounts. I know that when we plan our household budget, we predict a certain amount of revenue coming into the household. If we have a good year, that extra money prudently would go into a similar kind of account for our family. We wouldn't go have a kick with it. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Wimmer? Representative Hill?
I would just point out
as we create these things that are statutory, that writing a simple bill that says notwithstanding takes away the requirement for the 3/5. So, I don't want to fool anybody. When we do statutorily, you put these requirements for a higher vote, you can write a bill that says notwithstanding that, and then it's a simple majority vote. So, mm-hmm. FYI. So.
That's a good point. Any other questions for, I'm sorry, Ms. Whalen? And I'm not used to that yet. So, Rich, did you have a...
Yes, I did. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Rich Peppers with the Service Employees International Union Local 503 OPEU. And I'll be very brief. We support this bill. It meets, there are some items that I would like to touch on, many of which have already been mentioned, but our organization has adopted some criteria for consideration of stabilization funds or rainy day funds. And most of those criteria are met here, and some of them are not addressed. In particular, the issue that Ms. Whalen addressed of with the sources of revenue to fill this fund is an issue for us, and we take the same position as OEA in this particular instance. Don't rob Peter to pay Paul, and use new sources of revenue or new money that is currently not being used for service delivery. And so the trigger mechanism, I would just like to point out that the proposal made to change the word and to or, if that is a concern for this committee, because it leaves it wide open what the 3/5 vote might be for and doesn't define emergencies necessarily, we would support a definition of the kind of emergencies that you're considering in order to use this fund. And then I'll just be very quick and say that's all I have. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Pippen? I just want to clarify something if I can, Ms. Whalen. When you referred to the ending fund balance, so you were referring, when you referred to using the ending fund balance to put into the security fund, you were clarifying anything that would be carrying over from one biennium to the next biennium. That's the ending balance that you're talking about, that you'd say, yes, we should put that into the rainy day fund.
Mr. Chair, yes, that was what I was referring to.
Okay, thank you. Thank you both. Okay, Duncan Weiss.
Chair, members of the committee, my name is Duncan Wise. I'm president of the Oregon Business Council. I first came down to testify on the original 2057. I saw it was up. Mr. Chair, I think that's an excellent bill, and it should pass. But I guess that's not in the cards today with the amendment. So I will speak to the amendment. But I would just stress that the Oregon Business Council is on record, and we think it is very important that we have what that bill is calling for, which is a longer term look at the state's budget, and that we start forecasting. We would actually recommend going further than the 5 years you're suggesting, but to try to get a handle on some of the major expenditure and revenue issues out into the future and start planning for them instead of reacting to them. And that, so the bill, I thought it was an impressive bill, and I want to thank you for introducing it, Mr. Chair. But we understand that is not what's in front of us now. It's the rainy day fund, which is also an issue that's of significant interest to the Business Council. The association, of course, is a group of about 40 CEOs focused on long-term issues relating to Oregon's future. For quite some time, we have been advocating a reserve fund, a security fund, for the reasons you've already heard. The state, as you know, has a very high dependence on income taxes, which is a very volatile source of revenue, and we think in good times that generates a lot of revenue, but we do know in a downturn we're likely to see significant declines in revenue, which will put in peril a lot of the vital services that we need as a state for our quality of life and economic security. So we support the concept. The details of this bill, there are a lot of different ways to trigger. We've gone through this a number of times. There are a lot of ways to trigger a security fund. This is one proposal. The one suggestion I have is in looking at it, the language on appropriations on line 25, in some ways I would say that should be revenues, but again, I'm not going to get into the details, but what we're really talking about is when the revenue forecast is lower than the previous bienniums rather than the appropriations necessarily. As we see it, it's a way to adjust based on revenues. But however you want to focus it, and I heard the conversation about the different triggers. The traditional measure of recession is employment. Two quarters makes sense as one as a trigger mechanism. But again, a variety of ways you can trigger a reserve fund. We've looked at a number over the years, and again, we haven't particularly focused on this particular trigger. We do support the idea. I'm glad you're trying to create it, and would support the concept strongly.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Wise? Representative Beck?
Duncan, would the Oregon Business Council support us trying to identify funding mechanism? Maybe you said that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beck, we would encourage you to look at a variety. The one proposal we've made, which is over the years, and it's been in this, including this biennium, we certainly when the ballot measure was being proposed last time, it didn't make the ballot. We had suggested using one half of the kicker when it kicks as one source. We know that's controversial, but the theory of that was that, you know, the kicker is represents excess revenue in good times as a way to, you know, we ought to recognize that there will be downturns, and that's one mechanism. But we've also said that there are obviously a variety of possibilities. We have not explored the range of possibilities, so I'm not here to recommend one, but we certainly would encourage you to examine the alternatives. We'd love to work with you. We the Business Council, haven't had the chance to really examine what the other possibilities are. We put that one on the table, and there are certainly other possibilities.
Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you.
I do want to clarify one thing, Mr. Weiss. On line 25 of page 2, you were talking about the dash 4s to HR 33?
Yes, I guess. And 25,
and,
yes. I'm
and
sorry.
The mirror, and the mirror language in the dash.
In the dash, yeah.
In the dash
that's
2
correct.
Of...
Yeah.
So you would suggest that there, where it says the Legislative Assembly finds that either appropriations from the general fund for the next biennium will be at least 3%, that you put substitute appropriations with revenues?
Revenues for the general fund is how I – but again, don't – this is a suggestion. You need to analyze this. I don't know the history of this specific language, but to me that more reflects what we're talking about, but I may have been missing something here, but – but again, normally we'd be talking about a revenue forecast, and the revenue forecast being below expectations rather than appropriations, which to me that would be clear. But again, I'm not sure the history of this.
Okay. And would you leave it, taking that just a step further, where it says for the next biennium will be at least 3% less than appropriations from the general fund for the current biennium, would you also change that appropriations to revenues, or would you leave that at appropriations, jumping down to following the language.
Right. No, it should be less than the revenues for the general fund. Yeah, they should. Excuse me. You're right. That should be.
Then you would.
Yeah.
Okay.
Again, you might look at that. I'm not sure. You may.
Okay.
There may be problems with that too, but at least I'd encourage you to think about that as an alternative.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Hill.
Following up in terms of on that statement, I guess. My problem with using the term appropriations is because it isn't appropriation until you pass a bill.
Right.
And so it's kind of, is it, you know, you could manipulate it by, well, we're going to appropriate less, you know, so you could tap the dollars by just saying that, you know, you could still have all that reserve and it isn't an economic issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, I'm just, it's sort of the trigger of what is the protection? Who do they go to? The courts? To say, it was, you know, and who's to say that you wouldn't have otherwise not appropriated or done what you would have done had you not tapped the dollars? I mean, it's kind of the revenue seems to be a little bit more because you're talking about a forecast and it would tie it into the forecast that we get on revenues coming in, and it would sort of be I think a better trigger. I would agree with that.
Again, I'm Mr. Chair, Representative Hill. I'm not sure. I would encourage you to look at it, but I'm not sure. I'd want to give this some more thought. Thank you.
Yeah, I think we would want to take it. I agree. To kind of take a look at how the language is used here. But thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I do appreciate it.
Thanks.
Bob Shipwreck.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bob Shipwreck, Oregon Building Trades Council. I know you're in a hurry. I'm
just here to voice my support as well for the concept that you have in front of you today, and I appreciate that you're proceeding forward with this. From the construction industry, I just want to point out, and I appreciate Representative March's comments as well as the state treasurer's, just the creation of this type of fund will have an impact on our bond interest rates. That is substantial. I mean, and I would appreciate if maybe you can have Randall back in front of you just to demonstrate what that would mean to the state. And clearly, as long as I've been around here, I've been kind of mystified myself as why we don't set aside some things. Like my first session here was 1983, and I want to tell you, it was real tough. And the previous speakers have talked about four tax increases in four special sessions in 1982. Luckily, I wasn't here for that. But there were a lot of people weren't back in 83. Probably while I was here. But I also wanted to address one question that Representative Hill had. I would also encourage Paul Warner to come here. I routinely get the non-farm employment records monthly for my purposes to try and track what this economy does for so I can guess what my folks are going to be looking at. There are economists do have standard definitions of what a recession is, and should the bill go forward, I think you would use those types of things that are defined that economists understand and put it into the legislation. Support the concept very much, and hope it proceeds.
Okay. Great, thank you very much. You. Appreciate it. Members, we may be a little bit late for session. It's okay. Bill Perry. These are last verses.
We all leave.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Bill Perry with the Oregon Restaurant Association, and we've been supportive of this, the Rainy Day Fund concept for a long time. We supported Speaker Lundquist's bill in 97. We supported the bill again in 99, and obviously speaking in support of this one. The concern we have, a lot of talk was made of 1992 and whether or not our tax system works today. I don't want to get in an argument over that, but when you're heavily relying on income tax, when you have declines in the economy, obviously money stops coming in as well for the government. So you hurt your bonding rating, you hurt a lot of different things. And so we feel that this concept really helps ensure, protect the bonding rating, and also protect current service levels. We're not necessarily set that the catastrophic thing should be played into the bill, because what we're looking for is when your income tax revenues start to decline or not grow at the same level, do you have an ability to fill that blip to keep your current service levels? And we feel a rainy day fund helps keep that blip, so at least you can try to keep your current service levels as income taxes decline. Also, if you can keep those current service levels, bonding ratings stay the same. So the question is can you level off government activity when the economy goes down a little bit? And that really is the key to what we feel this fund is for. We understand there's other things like the catastrophic stuff that's going to exist, but that really doesn't have anything to do with what you can plan for in economic times. We feel this deals with what you plan for in the economic times. So as we get into some of the components of what this bill has done, we as an association have always said, well, what does the treasurer feel? And because the treasurer is really the person that's in charge of bonding ratings and everything else, so I was not here for Treasurer Edwards' testimony, so I apologize for that, but if he is comfortable that this does what needs to be done to stabilize current service levels and bonding ratings, it's what we think is going to be the best use for the state and for industry. So that's really what we're looking for as an association and why we've supported this bill in the past.
Okay.
With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Perry? Bill, I do have one question, and that is some of the ideas that have sort of that you sort of heard discussed here, some of the language changes and that sort of thing. Would you be supportive of those as well, or is that something the dashboards the way they are, you're pretty comfortable with them? And
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, actually, I haven't seen the dashes. I sent it to my certified smart people, which I've testified on committee before. I'm not certified smart, but and his feelings was the safeguards were sufficient enough. Like I said, I didn't get into an in-depth discussion with him, but I just sent it to him real quick, and I didn't look at him. I just faxed him to him. So he told me that it's sufficient, but he hasn't really given me a description of why he came to that conclusion. So.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any other questions?
What I got to comment. Not for you. You know, I'm supportive of the concept. I have some concern potentially over the triggers, and I'm not real sure about that. It's just I have now, this is my third legislative session. I've served through two sessions of economic growth, and now this one, and none of the three sessions have I ever felt that the will of the legislature would have taken revenues and put into a fund. We're going to spend it all. It's in our nature. And I think before we move something like this forward, we need to define secure funding sources for something like this. And whatever that may be, but to assume that the legislature is going to allocate the money, I think, is rather foolish. We will not. You know, it's a struggle for us to get out spending everything. So, I mean, that's just a concern. And the sense I've had in my short time in this body, in the last two sessions, when we did have money, we could have done that with, and we chose not to. So, so is a rainy day fund a good idea? Absolutely. But I think it only works with a secure funding source.
So, Representative, what you're suggesting is that in both the constitutional measure as well as the statutory measure, you would suggest that we lay in some of the, for example, as the ending fund balance was one idea that was talked about, a percentage of revenues was talked about.
Well, you know, Mr. Chair. When Lynn and I had first discussion about this in 97, when he first brought this up, and I said what I would support would be for us to budget 2 or 3% of the money we have to spend towards the rainy day fund, which I think would be appropriate. But our ability to do that wasn't very good then, probably still isn't very good. So at this point, I don't know that it matters what the source is. A percent of revenue off of something or something. I mean, there's a lot of things out there we could look at. We'll have to look at what we're doing with that funding source compared to what it was designed for. So, you know, I mean, lottery funds, you know, that's questionable, and I'm not sure I want to go there, but I would like to see some real work put into maybe defining a series of options as to what sort of funds we could find for something more secure than the will of the legislature, because the security there is non-existent.
Do you think that even in the if it's in the Constitution, the way it's stated now, just money is appropriated or transferred by the Legislative Assembly, you think that's too open, that we could basically choose to ignore that even though it's in the Constitution?
Mr. Chair, all it says is money is appropriated. It doesn't require us to do anything.
Okay. I appreciate your comments. Thank you. Representative Tomei?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just want to have a little different point of view here. I think there is some merit in passing this before and without stating a funding source, because I think once we can get the legislature to agree that this is a great idea, then the next step would be to come to a funding source. But I think, first of all, we need to have the legislature say that this is a great idea and pass that, because I think there'll be a lot of argument about what the funding source is, and we can kill the whole idea, the whole bill, by trying to determine what the funding source will be.
Okay. Any other comments? Let me just toss a question out. There's been some comments about some of the language that would suggest another amendment. A couple of ways we could do that would be, one, to go ahead and move the bill both bills today. The other would be to hold back on the HJR, and the third option, of course, would be to see if we can amend it over in the Senate side. I'm just curious as to if anybody has a preference or Representative Kefouri.
Thank you, Chair. I would suggest that we look into the suggestion that the OBC brought up about the revenue versus appropriation issue, because I do think that those are different words and they have different meanings, and we are talking about revenue versus, at least from the context of what this conversation has been, it has been about revenue rather than about appropriation. So I'd like to have Paul Warner maybe comment on, or whoever the ledge counsel was that wrote this, to discuss with us the difference between those two words and what the implications are. I would feel more comfortable doing that before passing them out, because I don't say we're going to amend on the Senate side doesn't always occur the way we would like, and since we have it in our control now, I'd rather that we put out the best product that we can put out.
Okay, I appreciate that. Representative Worth?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to state that I agree with Representative Kefouri, and in regards to the constitutional versus statutory, I'm completely comfortable with moving it as constitutional, and I trust the fact that a lot more thought and study has gone into choosing the constitutional mechanism than what we've bantered back and forth here today and arrived at possibly a statutory mechanism. So I'm fully confident with going constitutional the way it is.
Any other comments? I appreciate the comments that were made by, and that's one of the reasons for the invited testimony, was to get any other ideas that might be out there. And I think what I'm going to do is rather than, and I know I kept you all here in the hopes of voting on these, I think what I would like to do is close the work session on HJR 33, rework that a little bit more. What I'm curious about is 2057. Does that appear to be pretty satisfactory the way it is, or should we, because the language is supposed to be mirroring, we would probably want to do a fix on that appropriation as well? On that language as well. Any thoughts about that?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Beck?
While we're here and having this miraculous discussion about a big idea, I was complaining we're not enough big ideas yesterday in this building, so this is a big idea. And since there are a lot of interest groups that have are supportive of the concept, I think we owe it to this body and our constituents to have a discussion about funding sources. There's just this presumption that, oh, well, we're not going to find any money anywhere. Well, I think we should sit down with the treasurer and some of these interest groups to see if there are some funding sources, interest off of some of these big funds that the state manages, a little bit of interest that we might be able, I don't know what legal prohibitions there are, but sit down, just for the sake of discussion, if nothing else, and take a crack at actually putting some money into this so it's not just an empty shell. We may decide we can't do that or don't have the political courage to do that, but while we're having a discussion, I'd like to try to see if there are a menu of funding sources that we can at least mull over and start funding this thing. Not $250 million all in 2 years, but maybe between the SAFE and the Common School Fund and some of the other state investment funds, maybe there's a little bit of shaving off of some interest for the good of all the interest groups that benefit from those funds. Start establishing a security fund in the name of lower debt service or lower interest rates for all kinds of things we do. Every interest group in this building has an interest in this. And rather than just passing out an empty shell and patting ourselves on the back and saying we did it, I think we at least ought to try to see if there are some funding sets, mechanisms that the next 2 weeks of this hopefully waning legislative session, we can, do the right thing. What's my 2 cents or 25 cents?
Representative Kefauri?
30 cents, I think.
I respectfully disagree with my good colleague on the other side of the river. I agree with Representative Tomei that we are going to get mired down. We will not pass a bill out this session if we try to talk about every funding source. And I think it's important to take a step. It might not be the big step. It might be a baby step, but at least we're headed in the right direction. And we can continue. I think we all realize that passing the shell is not the answer, and we will continue the discussion on where the money is going to come from. But I think if we wait until we have the magic dollar amount from the magic source, we're going to be, I'll be here at age 50 having the same conversation, although I won't.
Well,
are you
he'll be term limited before then.
Yeah, respond to that.
Alexandra will be here then.
Alexandra will be here.
Alexandra will be here.
They respond to that.
Right.
Sure.
Yes.
The elder members of this committee take offense.
I'm not suggesting we don't pass an empty shell out. We may want to do that. I'm suggesting that while we're having the discussion, we owe it to ourselves to have in front of us some potential funding sources and see if we want to go there. That's all. I'm not saying we don't do this. I'm saying let's at least put some ideas on the table.
Yeah.
Right?
It's absolutely wonderful. There's so much enthusiasm for passing something that does nothing. I really appreciate that.
Okay, I think what I'm going to do is rather than move these out today, I think what I'm going to do is rework the. I'll sit down with some folks. We'll kind of work on the language just a little bit. I will reschedule these for Thursday, and what we'll do is we'll put them up first on the agenda. So as soon as we can get everybody here. We'll want to begin a work session at that.
You've noticed that Representative Beck and I will probably do on a minority report.
So, with that, I'm going to close the work session on HR 33, and we stand adjourned.